Some of you might like to know a little bit more about our drummer.
Now going back to 40 years of Chick Webb.
Is drummer right? Is it okay to say drummer?
Pounding his pulsing beat into the hearts of all America.
You motherfuckers are slapping all over this joint.
You do your kind of drumming, and I'll do my kind of drumming.
I have no more time. You don't know what I'm up against.
The only things I care about in this goddamn life are me and my drums and you.
The official explanation was he choked on vomit.
You suppose maybe I could put the drums in your place and sort of drop in?
Now back to Gene Krupa's syncopated style shortly.
Get up there behind those drums, lean back, close your eyes, get right on the groove there, give it a good steady beat.
I got blisters on my vision!
I'd hit that.
This is Gene Simmons from KISS. I'm here to tell you that I'd Hit That merchandise is now available. Go to idhitthatpodcast.com, spell it all out. T-shirts, hoodies, mugs, now available. One of the best ways to support the show. I'm in Nashville with Nick Buta.
All right. Happy to be here.
Nick, it's great to have you here. Thanks for coming. Now, let's... By the way, where are you from?
Okay. Originally South Africa.
Yeah.
Grew up in Cape Town, and we moved to the States a little before I turned 13. I was 12. We moved here, and I moved to Nashville. Because my aunt, a singer-songwriter, the idea was to advance her career, move to the States, do that thing. And also, it was right in the middle of apartheid, so we left that situation. My mom was very anti-everything going on.
Yeah.
So we...
You're probably about my age. That was like, I remember like Little Steve in Sun City.
Oh, yeah.
That whole thing.
Exactly.
It was like that time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went through the middle school and high school here in Nashville, that's the deal.
And I'm sure you've heard this a million times. It's like, okay, first of all, I knew nothing when I asked you, and you showed up, and I'm sure you hear this all the time or you've heard it before, which is like, there's an accent I just can't place.
Pops out every once in a while, a couple words here and there.
But it's like this thing where I'm almost like, I couldn't place it. Yeah. I was like, what is that?
Give me a few drinks. It'll come out even a little
and
more.
And then it comes out. You sound like Anton Fig?
Well, not quite Anton, but yeah. I mean, if I'd moved when I was a little older, like 17 or 18, I bet my accent would be a lot more defined. You'd hear more South Africa in it. Anton obviously moved when he was a little older.
Oh, yeah.
And you can hear his accent still.
Yeah. Well, wasn't Spider from there? I mean, or do I have that wrong? Wasn't he was in the band Spider.
He was. I don't know. Shoot, I should know that. And I don't.
You don't know the answer?
Yeah. But the truth is that actually Anton knew, well, I would say that I knew Anton, but I don't really remember it as well. But he knew me when I was a little kid. His mom and my grandmother were friends in Cape Town. Because he's from Cape Town. So he knew me when I was 6, 7 years old.
Anton knew you?
Mm-hmm. I mean, we were around
each other. Just coincidence,
you
mean? Or?
Completely. Just being in Cape Town before he left. And then years, I mean, a whole lot of years later. Let's see, how long ago? For me, probably about 15 years ago was the first time I played Letterman. And we would connect every so often. Just we have very light connection. And then
so he did know.
Yeah,
you were,
yeah, completely, yeah. Completely. I think I saw him do a clinic here when I was in high school or something like that. But anyway, and then we connected when I was at Letterman, and we kind of, and now whenever he's, well, for the most part, when he's here, he'll let me know that he's here. And I'll definitely let him know when I'm in New York. And if we can hang, we do. If we don't, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
That's cool.
But yeah. No,
that's cool.
He's an awesome guy.
The fellow. I like to hear that. I see that. I like that.
Yeah.
You guys connected at least over. Yeah, that's really cool. You guys have known each other, like you said.
My whole life.
Your whole life.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Is there anyone else that we know from, I mean, drummers? I don't think I asked him. Because you know he's been on the show. I don't know if you heard it or not.
Actually, I haven't heard his show. I bet it doesn't
Nick.
Surprise me.
Obviously. No,
I know. I should have listened to a whole... I should have spent the last 3 months listening.
Do you know how old that is? It's so old that we did it at the Letterman studio.
Did you really?
Yeah, in fact, yeah. It was. He met me there. It was before the show. And we ended up... I remember moving into Paul's office. Like, we needed a quieter... We had to move...
Right.
You were, anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Is there anyone else you don't know?
Drummers from South Africa. I mean, I should know this, and yet I can't really think of it. I mean, there's lots of musicians from South Africa.
Right.
And producers.
I was just curious, like, other drummer hang guys.
Yeah, you know, I've not... As this interview goes on, if I think of somebody, I'll...
Right on, man.
Blurt it out.
I just love that you know Anton. Yeah. I love it. He had... By the way, and that was also during the trial of Pistorius, right?
Oh, wow. When all that was going on.
That's when... Whenever that was, and I remember I asked him, I said, hey, by the way, what do you think of that case? You know what the answer is? Do you remember the answer?
No.
He said, he doesn't have a leg to stand up.
Ah, yeah.
Come on.
Good. But that's good. Yeah, that's right.
So... Nick Buta, now your main gig is that...
Well, yeah, this country guy.
That country guy, Kenny Chesney.
Yep. Nowadays, well, I'd say it's split. Like, I've been a session guy for the last who knows how long, and I hadn't done a road gig other than, a couple weeks here and there or a weekend here and there with somebody. Certainly not in a band with somebody for a very long time. I can't even think. And then this gig came along, and yeah, it takes up some amount of time, but it doesn't take up all the time. So I keep all the baskets available. The eggs are split
right.
as much as they can be because
right.
you know
yeah. right. No, that's so. What's the is the schedule like the usual kind of thing where that's the weekend five four
yeah,
nights?
Yeah, you know it. So this has been my second year with him this year. I started at the beginning of last year. And last year, pretty much as I started, we went into rehearsals, which was pretty intensive for the 4 to 6 weeks or whatever those rehearsals were for. And then the tour last year was mostly some Wednesday nights and otherwise Thursday through Sunday kind of vibe. And that's it. So Mondays, Tuesdays, and most Wednesdays I was in town. You know, so somebody's calling for a session, I definitely try to steer it to the beginning of the week if possible. And then it's pretty easy breezy. You know, it's such a well-oiled machine, his deal, that we, I've got just amazing people around me. I mean, I would be pretty, not the easiest guy to be around on the road if it wasn't right, because I'll get grumpy and like, oh, why the hell am I out here in the middle of nowhere playing with blah, 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 whatever. But it's turned out to be such a great scenario. Like, to be a part of a team like that, to be around such positive people that are all really good at their jobs, that are all very happy to be in that space.
Yeah.
That's a pretty great... As I've gotten older in this industry and kind of seen how difficult it can be, how many sort of areas of gut punches there can be, it's nice to be able to, you know what I mean? It's nice to be able to like, this feels very comfortable, you know? And that starts from the top all the way down in that deal. It's beautiful. It's great.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. And that everyone that is there would be on that level.
It is. Just it is.
A pro who understands like what a great deal we got. Yeah,
and how fortunate it is to be there. You know, mm-hmm. that's a great thing. I mean, we are officially done for this year. So, you know, it's kind of back to the hobnobbing grind of, you know, session work, which is great. I love both sides of that coin. I love playing sessions. But I'm already looking forward. Next year is going to be another big playing the stadiums and doing that deal. And it's great. Like, what's not to love about that? We'll start rehearsing sometime in March. The first gig will be sometime mid to late April, and we'll go to the end of August weekends doing that thing and playing these huge joints. Damn. You know, it's beautiful.
Not bad for Kenny Chesney.
Not bad.
He's done for the year.
Yeah.
March, he's just hanging.
Not only that, but we were actually supposed to be done May, I guess. By the end of May, and then these bits and pieces of dates kind of popped in that he decided to take, and we just did a couple. We hadn't done any for 3 or 4 weeks between whatever. So I mean, there've been spatterings of gigs since between May and now, but he just did a little spring tour, secondary market, just kind of do our thing, stay off the big stadium thing for a year while you've got, you know, Taylor and all these other people out there that are covering that market, and then next year he'll go out and and hit it. It'd be great.
It's amazing, man. I love it. Hey, by the way, I mean, so you've been on the gig for 2 years.
Yeah.
And you had never done it previously? It was never... Okay.
I'd never met Kenny before.
Oh, okay. Were you just recommended? Is that...
That's it.
One of those?
Yeah.
So it was just a call, like, hey, can you do it?
Well, I'll be honest, and this was... It was a funny deal. I got called for the gig by one of the guys in the band. I've known a lot of the guys in the band for a long time. Most of them are session players. And one of the guitar players, John Conley, called me about it. And it's funny, he called me over that Christmas break of right before that. And it took me about 4 or 5 days to even call him back. Because I kind of thought he was calling me about something else. We were right in Christmas vacation. I kind of checked out already, blah, blah, blah. Finally call him back. And he had thought that I just wasn't interested or was like, I don't know, what's the deal with this guy? So anyway, call him back, find out what it's about. Kenny Greenberg is also a great player in town, great guitar player. I've played with him on sessions for 20 years. And he and I talked for a long time about it and about what the deal is. And because I'm not the guy that's going to jump at a country gig. Like, I'm not really into a lot of country. Like, I know I play a lot of it, or record a lot of it, I should say. But I, you know, to me, like, I didn't know who Kenny Chesney was. I mean, I knew who he was, but I didn't know
who... You knew the name.
I didn't know who he was.
You couldn't name a
person.
Okay.
And yeah, I could name, like, he does that Tractor Sexy song or whatever. And that, literally, that was about it. So even though I knew it was a big gig as far as Nashville gigs are concerned, I wasn't sure that I was that into doing it. But then the more I talked to them, I was like, okay, well, I'm at least going to go down this road. Oh, but the thing was, is I had to audition. And in my own egoed whatever, I was like, they could just look me up. Why do I need to, like, this is ridiculous. I mean, not to be all whatever, but I've done things for a long time. Anyway.
Do you know who I am?
Yeah, exactly. I didn't want to be, I'm certainly not that guy. But there was also like a, really, I don't want to have to audition. It also puts you in a position to be completely vulnerable. It puts you in that vulnerable position of like, if I audition and don't get it, then I auditioned for something that I didn't get. And you know what I mean?
Obviously. Well, I auditioned for Kenny Chesney. I didn't get that.
Right. And yeah, I just didn't, yeah. I didn't want to have to go down that road. And
well, hold on. Look, I just want to break this down for a minute because so your buddy, he's the MD, I take it, when he calls you.
He wasn't. He was just one of the guitar players. The MD of the band is a guy named Wyatt Beard. And Wyatt's been with Kenny for a very, very, very many years. And Wyatt said to the band guys, listen, the drummer who I replaced had been with Kenny for 25 years. Kenny almost had not known any other live drummer.
I see.
Ever. So the scenario was, can everybody recommend a few names, couple names, whatever, of people that you think would be a good fit player and mm-hmm. vibe-wise? And so everybody did. And I found out later that I was the one guy that ended up on everybody's list, which was nice to know. And Wyatt told me that before the audition. He said, listen, man, I'm just so you know, I mean, yeah, you are going to need to audition because Kenny wants to hear some people. He's never played a gig with another guy.
That was the main thing I was curious about. Like, was it the MD or was it like, look, man, this is Kenny wants to hear.
That's it.
Because I was going to say, that there's just no way around
it. There's no way around it. And that's what, and that
when
was
the artist.
Deal. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I didn't know who I was going to be auditioning up against. I honestly didn't want to know anything at that point. I hate the idea of auditions. I didn't look at Kenny's tour schedule. I didn't look at anything.
But did they give you specific songs?
They gave 5 or 6 songs, something like that. They said, learn these songs, come and play them. And I'll be honest, at first I was like, all right, well, I'm just going to chart these tunes out. I'm not going to, like, I don't want to put a whole ton of effort into it. And I spoke to a very close friend of mine, bass player named Steve Mackey. And Steve said, dude, just put the tunes on in the car and listen to them and learn them. You don't need to chart this shit out. Just learn them and go in there without any paper in your hand and just go and play the songs. And I was like, you're right. You're right. So I did. And did that deal. And it came out in my favor. And that's awesome that it did. And even at that point, even though I'm pretty sure I was going to take it because I knew the sort of level of it, I still wasn't. Wyatt said, hey, man, take a couple days, think about it, you know, talk to your family, the whole thing. And then at that point is when I looked at the schedule, saw how great it was, because it really is. It's like the busiest year he's going to have is 45 dates. You know, that's it. You know, so that means time at home, time to keep the session thing going as well, which is, you know, I mean, for me, it's about keeping work going at all sides, right? And And like I said, I love both sides of the coin. I love playing the live gigs. I love rocking out. I mean, you can see, like, we did some gigs after not playing for a few weeks. My hands are freaking destroyed, but it's so much fun.
You got blisters again.
I got blisters again, yeah. And when we're in the mode of playing, obviously my hands are there, but I love that. I love recording. I love creating parts. No matter how simple or complex the tune is, I love creating the thing that helps make the tune the thing. So, yeah, the Kenny thing ended up being a freaking golden egg. I mean, I went in thinking, like, okay, well, let's just see. And I kept doing that down the path. Well, okay, and I walked into the rehearsal. I was like, oh, wow, okay, these guys are, this is awesome. And then walked into the first gig. Holy shit, this is insane. Like, my first gig was in Tampa at the Buccaneer Stadium down there, and it was 55,000, I don't know what it was, 50-something thousand people. But we had the whole week there to rehearse beforehand. We had rehearsals, and they keep amping up the rehearsals, and so the last three rehearsals were at the stadium. So we got to play there without anybody in it, just kind of rehearsing and getting used to the space. And even that was like, okay, wow. And then that first night when you walk out, it's like the first time they had played since the pandemic, so they had been off for 3 years.
This is your first show.
And my first show with them. My first show in a stadium, period. I actually had never even been in a band opening up for somebody in a stadium before. So here I am walking out, 57,000 people, the pinnacle of the buildup of everybody in the crew and band was that moment of hitting the ass. Yeah, it's awesome.
Damn.
Well, you know, like I said, I've been doing this a long time. I feel like I've done a lot of the things. Fortunately, I've gotten to do a lot of the things, and that was definitely something I'd not ever done. But it was definitely a new thing, you know, so it was awesome. Yeah.
I love it, man. I love it. I love the excitement.
Yeah, and it's been awesome. Honestly, that gig has been awesome ever since. It just keeps, even this spring, we were doing smaller, you know, kind of in quotes, venues, being arenas and stuff like that, and it's freaking great.
Man, it's like you said, it's a well-oiled machine. It's jumping on a moving train. I mean, yeah, it's one of those scenarios where it's like, what the heck? You don't get better. But you know, look, you put the work in.
Yeah. Yeah. You put the work in and you just keep at it.
I mean, think about that. It's not like this isn't no overnight BS. I mean, I'm saying it's well-earned, you know?
Well, thanks.
And you were on everyone's list.
Yeah, I know. Hey,
as you said, like, see,
and somehow and it's not something you can't set that up. You just do what you do.
Well, that was that's back to you did the work.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but you grew up here. That's the other thing. Like, you did grow up here.
I've been here long. Yeah, completely. I went through those years here playing in bands around town for so many years through high school and the years. I mean, I left. I sort of continued to leave and come back, but I've still. Something drew me back to Nashville. Well, even back in the day before Nashville was the city it is now, there was something about the scene here that just, you know, even in the crossroads, it was like, should I go to LA? Should I go to whatever? I kept ending up back here.
Well, let's talk about that. You went to LA?
No, I never did. I went out and visited a friend of mine that had moved out there, stayed there for a little while, thinking about that scenario, and just never, listen, if I had decided to just pick up and go there, and found a way to plant myself there, I'm sure I would have made the connections, and who knows where that would have gone.
Well,
but I know where this went, and I'm happy about it. So
what year was that when you did go, like, just to check it out?
Yeah, I went in. I would have been right before I moved. It'd probably been the very early 2000s, or either right after I moved back here again, or right about that point, maybe 2003, 2004, something like that. I went out there for a week or 2 weeks or whatever and just sort of hung out, spent some time with no agenda, just kind of. He was a singer-songwriter, bass player who's freaking great, and he went out there to rented a place for a year at least to see what he was going to do. He ended up not staying out there either. But
you had a reconnaissance mission.
I did.
For 3 weeks and just kind of felt it out. Yeah. Okay, I get it.
You know, I knew that it wasn't going to be New York. I went to school in Boston. I did the whole Berkeley thing and did that deal. And so I played in New York a bunch. And even in the years touring right after college, I was playing in New York a fair amount. And I just knew the idea of the hassle of New York for a drummer.
Oh, yeah. No, no.
Not interested.
Well, I mean, that's why the 18 was invented, as you probably know.
That's right.
Trunk of a taxi.
That's right.
Hold on. So let's back up. So you went to Berkeley. Did you do the four, or you did?
I did, but I kind of stayed up there through the summers. So I just kind of lived in Boston for those years.
Okay.
So I did it, but like in three. Okay. Because I was touring and playing, and I just was doing classes around all that. And
okay.
There you go.
Okay, okay. Well, who was there when you were there?
Ah, that's a good question. I remember Casey Sherrill was there. He was one of the drummer guys. I remember... oh man, I'm blanking on all of the all the people. There were people. They were great.
There had to be guys, right?
Yeah. I mean, listen. I remember one of the key moments while I was at Berkeley was John Robinson came to do every year they would do a drum week, and they would have a few big name drummers come to Boston for the week and teach lessons. And then do a big show at the end of the week. And one of my guys that I've become friends with there was a ridiculous guitar player. It was a teacher over there. And we did a bunch of playing together. And so he told me he didn't even know who John Robinson was at that point. Some guy named JR or something's coming to do it. And I was like, are you kidding me? So I went to the rehearsal that they were going to have right as JR flew in. But his flight was late. So the rehearsal ended up getting canceled, but he got there before we actually left, because I was just hanging out hoping that he would get there. So the moment he got to Boston, we talked for an hour, because he got there, he was like, oh, well, shit, and the most band had left or whatever, and me and this dude Bobby and a couple other people were there, and and that was awesome. That whole week, I just attached myself to whatever he was doing. He was doing a clinic, I went to the clinic, and his wife was with him too, and she was very sweet, and I was the guy that hung out with him the whole time. That, to me, talking to him about the things that he did. I know his wife was telling me he used to go to sleep listening to a metronome or listening to some constant whatever. He had this, like, she just talked a lot about how he still loved playing along with music. And he would sitting with that time, that thing, I don't know, whatever it was.
No, wait, I'm fascinated. Like he went to sleep,
like, yeah,
to a metronome.
Yeah, that's what she told me.
And
there was that constant in his,
so it's playing in the room, so she's hearing it too,
or on headphones or something like that. I love it. Yeah, those little things. Yeah, and when he left after that weekend, he made sure that I had his home number. In LA, he was like, man, if you're ever in LA, call me, whatever. And I did a couple times end up there, sort of trying to be around him some more. And he's a busy guy, obviously. So we ended up chatting on the phone a few times, but that was about it. But anyway, one of my moments at Berkeley that I really kind of stuck to was that week was John Robinson.
Just were like tailing him, tagging, mm-hmm. just being there. Like,
I was just such a big fan of his.
Yeah, but...
Of what he... You know, I think about what drummers bring to music outside of just being the guy that plays on the track. And you think about how those songs were that he was, those iconic songs that he happened to be the drummer on, let's say. What would those would have been without him being there? And he's not a flashy player. He's not a guy that steps out a bunch and does all kinds of great stuff. But damn, the way he lays stuff in is, yeah. And that's what, it's funny, that week, that Saturday night, it was him and Dennis Chambers, and I'm trying to think who else was on it. But obviously, you couldn't have more different kind of players. Like, Dennis was explosive. And JR just did vibey, cool. It was cool. It was cool. Even from how old was I? 20 or so, something like that. From that perspective, where flashy got my attention a lot.
Sure.
And I was trying all the things.
Yeah.
I loved JR's subtleness in how he sat in it. Yeah, it was cool.
Was it mainly pocket? Was it mainly
completely pocket? And then he would do, like, instead of like big muscular things like Dennis was doing, which is insane. Obviously, he did things where, like, he'd lay down this groove and then do some things with his hands on the, like, turn the snare off and do some things with the hand on it with this like pulse behind it. And I just remember those kind of things being like, huh, not nearly as explosive and yet so cool. You know. It kind of, that's...
And also for the size of him, does that come into play in your mind? Like, he's a big guy, yeah? I've never met him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's never been on.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It will.
Yeah, it will.
Oh, we'll get there.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I guess I never really thought about that. I'm kind of a big guy, and I don't really think of... Because I love
Oh, he's your size? Is that?
I think so, but I guess I didn't really think about that.
He appears, look, maybe it's because most drummers aren't that. Maybe it's right. That. You see pictures of JR, he seems so towering. So,
Yeah, that's true. Like, a lot of drummers tend to be, like, not as tall. Yeah.
I mean, it is what it is. It's like, you ever meet Ferroni?
You know what? I've never met Ferroni.
Now, there's a big dude.
Yeah?
Well, like, just kind of wide. Yes. Yeah. Like, probably one of the widest.
Really?
Yeah, as a drum. Well, I mean, you could have drummers who are, like, big guys, but that's in a different way. He's just like, what are you, an ex-foot? Yeah.
Like football shoulder
kind of
vibe.
Exactly. Where you're just dude, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to have trouble with Steve Ferroni.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because he's such a smiley dude, too.
Totally.
You know, yeah.
But I saw him, I've told the story. Like, I saw him shouting at his, the guy renovating his home, and it was like, oof.
Ooh, don't want to be on that side.
You ever seen Song Remains the Same, Peter Grant?
Yeah.
British gangster with his t-shirt guy?
Sure.
Awesome. It was right there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Oh, Ferroni can do it, man.
That's interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny. I've been talking about Ferroni a lot. This our front of house guy for Chesney is a guy named Robert Scoville, who was the front of house guy for the Heartbreakers for like 23 years or something.
Oh, man. You get all the stories.
So we've been talking a lot about, there's a lot of the Stan Lynch, Ferroni, the difference in they, you know.
He got to work with both?
No, he came in right as Ferroni came in. Right at the beginning of that time, which was the Wildflower. I just saw that documentary, the Wildflowers documentary, which actually I was pretty surprised they made a pretty big point in that documentary about the changeover from, into Ferroni. And that's what I was talking to Scoville about just recently, a couple weeks ago, whatever, about that thing. And that's when he started, was right as Ferroni came in. So right as that record, the tour for that record started, was when he came in. So, yeah. Interesting. But obviously he heard a lot. He was in that camp. So there were lots of talks about the thoughts from the band on those two different styles, being pretty big in how that band sounded. I mean, they both have very specific styles and very different, you know.
It's so different.
So that it was interesting how Tom wanted to make the change, how, you know, Baggage Years, all the stuff, and how that record, I mean, it says so in the documentary, how Stan was not a big fan of those tunes. And so it whatever divide was there, it only increased it, you know. And then when, and not in a negative to either side, just that's what it was. And I think that when Ferroni came in, it was interesting. It was interesting from a drummer. Hey, we all fight the same battles here. You know, we all have our own styles that we bring to a camp. And when it works, beautiful. And this is on sessions too. When it works, beautiful. And when it doesn't work, it's like, it's like an awkward conversation. You know what I mean? And I know some of the, from what I have now heard, some of the guys in the band were a little, like Ferroni does not bring in the same, it just wasn't the same, right? So they felt a little like, what is this? I'm sure there was a moment in that first tour of what's happening to this band, you know?
Yeah.
And then it got cohesive as all hell after that, you know? So.
Yeah, I mean, that was also, by the way, Howie Epstein was still there.
Right. That's right.
Yeah, it wasn't like the back to Ron Blair yet.
Right.
Yeah,
it's interesting. I mean,
Miss Howie, man. Howie brought so much to that.
Band dynamics, like hearing about the band dynamics from the inside, to me, it's just so interesting. I've not ever been in it. I'm not a band guy. I've not ever really been in a band. And for a lot of times, there was the practicality of like making this work with all these, with these four or five different personalities all, like, that's not easy.
Well, it's back to like, I mean, JR and Chaka Khan, right? Rufus.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I was in a band with her.
Yeah, I know how that.
I
can't even. And only that, but I'm a pretty sensitive dude. I think there's a lot of things that would just strike me. I would have a hard time working in that sort of environment.
In a band, yeah.
In that.
Sort well, of also thing. For depend the personalities and like you said, and how long we talking about here? I mean, are we doing a Beatles 6-year run, or are we doing, you know, are we U2?
That's right.
Are we going to grow up together?
Life is a lifetime. Yeah.
You know.
And I can't, honestly, I can't even imagine that.
That's why I give those bands credit, by the way. Like, huge. The U2s, and there's Well, yeah. REM didn't quite make it because the drummer just tapped out. But
Aerosmith. I mean, you think about those bands that have been together for
Metallica.
I mean, oh yeah, God. I mean, the Stones. I mean, any no matter how big you've gotten,
to just put up with each other. That's right. What I'm saying.
And being like, that big, like that's amazing for X amount of time, and then that's just who you are.
Yeah.
You still have your personalities every day, and that's the shit that you deal with. you know, other people deal with how big you are. You still have to deal with the inner band stuff, you know.
But they do, I'll say this, you do get to an age, and I know you and I can both appreciate this at our age. It's like, I think you do get to an age and you go, this is what it is, man.
Completely. And I think
like you're not going to reinvent yourself. Just give in.
Yeah.
Let go. Yeah. Go make some money. Go have some fun with it and just accept it. Like, yeah.
I think though, you know, I think that the one thing I love, and this is where I don't know that I've ever been the, okay, this is what I'm doing. I'm going to sit in this chair and be happy about it. I think, I don't know if I can put it down to the ego or whatever, but there's a certain amount of like, okay, there's a certain amount of the recording industry that I have decided not to fight with anymore because it's a losing battle, right? I think we all know that who gets called on the thing if in this town. I'm not as aware of the LA, New York, however that works, but it's a lot of, there's a lot of social media involved. There's a lot of who's the guy right now, who's been the guy, and a fair amount of producers in this town are not saying, I need this person on this record because of blah, blah, blah style. It's more, this is the guy that's being called a bunch. I'm going to call him for this record. And I think a lot of it has to do with the music that's being made here, not saying anything bad about it, but it's not necessarily going to be a make or break by any one of the players on the session. As I would say, getting the right guys back in the 70s, 80s and at LA, New York for whatever record, I think they did kind of make or break that record. Or it certainly, if it didn't break it, it certainly made it what it was, you know? And there's that.
Interesting.
I think if you think about
it, I think I know where you're going.
I think if the crews that were called, I think in those days, I can't imagine that for a Ricky Lee Jones record that it was like, well, see if you can get this guy, and if not, see if you can get Gad on this track, and if he's busy, let's go with. I don't think that there was an ever.
You think
if
it was busy, we hold out for Gad.
Here are the guys we want Gad, on the session. Let's find the day they can all do it.
Well, okay, so it's interesting you say that because I'm sure you've heard this too. I've heard that about like the Larry London era.
Oh, God, yes.
Right? Where it was like, if he wasn't available, we wait.
That's right. That's right.
And you're saying that doesn't exist today here?
Hardly ever. It does. There's a small, I would say 1%. There's occasionally I get called for something and I'm not able to do it. And they say, well, or they'll say, I'm looking at this 2-week period. When can you do? That's the best case. And I'm like, okay, here are the days. And then a couple days later, they confirm it. That's great. There's others that they have called for a day. I say, I can't do it. And then they will ask, well, when can you do it? That's great too. I mean, obviously it's beautiful to feel like you're a priority in those scenarios, because I will say most of the time, man, I got to have you on this project. We're doing a Thursday at 2:00. You cool? Oh man, I'm sorry. I'm booked. I could do it. 10 that day, I could do the morning, I could do the next day. That's cool, man. We'll get you on the next one. You know,
and because they're like, no, we're at two.
We're doing it. And honestly, as much as I can gripe about that kind of thing, I can't fault them for it. They got to get this stuff done, and as much as I would like to think that my playing is going to be the thing that makes it for them, it's not. They're going to be fine. In this era of the type of music that we're making and the way that we're recording it, the fact that you can manipulate like you can, and unfortunately, man, I just really want to feel that groove, that backbeat is only that only becomes a thing in a small percentage of the music being made, because most of it is, we're gonna record it, grid it, that is what it is, you know.
Yeah.
And that's fine for what that is. I may be either old school or just so into the art of what players bring to a project that I really gravitate towards the projects that are really about the music, because and for those, I think it is important who the players you get, because it is really about what that the art that those players are bringing to that recording. That to me, that's it. You know, when you have a recording that you realize you're in and like, oh man, everybody is bringing their this would be different if any one of these people were not here, you know. I think that's
it's casting.
That's the beauty of it.
It's casting. It's, I mean, great. I think that's the similarity with, like you're saying, like a great record, an album, a song, a track, a movie, a film, right?
Yeah.
It's like you couldn't, at certain films, you can't imagine a different cast.
Oh my gosh, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A different lead role. You can't, it's unimaginable. It's
that's right.
That's perfect. Don't touch a thing. It's the same idea.
I really feel like it is. And that scenario, although is everything I just said about the Sessions theme, I kind of feel that way about Kenny's band right now. I think that's what's so beautiful about it is I couldn't imagine any one person in that band being different because of the we're all very different in that band, and it's what we bring together. There's a beautiful chemistry there that just kind of happened to be, you know. And I think that's part of why I enjoy it so much, because I know the thing that I'm playing is the thing that I'm bringing to it, not just the part I'm playing. You know, and that's kind of cool. Especially in a live situation where particularly out of Nashville acts, a lot of that is discouraged. There's a lot that's like, we've got all these tracks, play like the record, blah, blah, blah. You know, there's very little room for being you. And I like I'm all about it. I think I'd have a very hard time in a gig that didn't allow me to be me.
Yeah, no, I'm getting that about you, man. Like, you're really... okay, because hold on real quick, actually, now that I think about it, because you mentioned the front of house guy telling stories, and you're talking about the band. They've been there a long time. Mm-hmm. Have you ever gotten any scoop on when Eddie and Alex Van Halen would pop in and sit in with Kenny Chesney's band and all that?
You know, a little bit with Eddie coming in. They've mentioned it before.
Because they were there, right?
Well, Scovel, a front house guy, he came in the same time I did. So he came in at the beginning of last year.
But too. Some of the band
has some been, of the band guys have been there for
that's
that.
That's what I'm saying. So they were there for all that.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know Alex did too. As memory serves, I think
did Alex made drums on some stuff. Really?
I believe so.
I need to ask him about that.
Because I think that's literally like the only known credit. Like Alex Van Halen is known. You can only hear him on Van Halen records. Like all the other guys have appeared on
other stuff.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Alex exclusively. But I think that's the one twist to it. Like he's played live, jumped up with Kenny Chesney.
I'm going to ask Kenny now. He never mentioned it, but I would love to hear what that was like.
Because it's by the way, it's also just a very weird friendship. It's like, it's so random of like all the people that Van Halen's going to be hanging out with.
But you know what's funny about Kenny Chesney? Like, one of the guys that has come up a bunch that they've talked about having, hopefully it comes up again because of how awesome it was Sammy Hagar. Sammy came in and sang with, and they did, I can't remember if they did Can't Drive 55 or whatever it was.
Finish What You Started.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, they did something and how awesome it was. And I think part of that is that, like these days, the Chesney Band is a rock band. So it's not that far of a stretch for me actually to think about Alex playing some big straight rock groove on... That's one of those tunes.
Well, who knows? Like you said, who knows what they play? Because I'm sure Eddie was there too. I didn't mean like it was with Eddie.
Yeah,
But I mean, it's more, I think, the idea of picturing Kenny Chesney, a cowboy hat with, you know what I mean,
completely.
And Eddie Van Halen. Like, that's the friendship.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just so random.
It's bizarre. But that's the thing. I think the one of the cool things about him is, yes, cowboy hat. But outside of that, he's pretty non... Listen, his songs are for the most part in the country genre, no doubt. But as a guy, he's not overly country. He's pretty just kind of...
Well, isn't he now like a very just high-taste millionaire? Isn't he?
Well...
Isn't he basically now like, oh, the caviar at 4 o'clock?
But you see, he's actually not that guy.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, yes, he's got his plane and he does.
He's got good taste at this point.
He's got a beautiful house in St. John. Yes.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But he will not... use that to be any more than anybody else. You know what I mean? He's
still got that regular guy vibe going on.
He drives one of the newer Broncos or whatever. He's not a dude that needs to show that he has that money.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. And he would never, in company, you would never get the sense that he needs to be seen as any more than anybody else in the room.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
cool. I like to hear that. Yeah, all right, yeah, right on, man. I mean, and I could see you being, you're clearly that guy too, where that's not going to go well with you. If you were playing with someone who pulled that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. He has been nothing but incredible to me since day one. So.
No, I like to hear that. All right, so maybe one day you could collect some Van Halen stories.
Oh, man. I will.
You'll have to ask around.
I can't believe that. Like, I've heard about Eddie sitting in with them and how awesome that was, but I don't have any meat on it. So,
No, I got you. I got you. Okay, so we're going to back up. So, you, Berklee, 3 years. You said you were touring. Are you touring while you're in school?
So, I mean, just regionally. Probably within a year of being there, I met these guys that were in a band, like kind of a hippie kind of jam band kind of thing. And so weekends we would go out and play, New Hampshire, Maine, blah, 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 wherever. And then during the week I would be back there doing the classes and doing that thing. And I did that for a fair amount. And then every once in a while I would go out with a couple of, you know, singer-songwriters from there and do some stuff. But yeah, yeah.
Who, when you were there, who was the guy? Like, and I mean, I'm curious also, like, when you went in and you were the new guy and you're just looking up at, you know, the seniors as, you know. Like, who was the guy when you first got there?
So,
And even if it was a guy, it's like no one's ever heard of since. I like that, too. That's interesting. Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about.
He's motioning with his hands, a drummer.
No.
You know who I'm talking about.
It's only because I'm talking to you right now that I'm blanking on his name. But, you know, John Prince's...
Prince's drummer?
Yeah, yeah.
You had to get me with that one, too. Now I'm blank.
Unfortunately, he passed away, unfortunately.
Yeah, they're screaming at the thing right
but
now.
But he was...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just remember seeing him. The first time I saw him play was at the Berklee Performance Center. He was playing with the gospel choir or something there. And I walked in and I was like, holy shit, who is that dude? Because, I mean, the pocket was badass, but his showmanship was incredible. He's playing and the stick flips on every beat and he's doing all the stuff and not missing a thing. And this is, I mean...
He's a student at this point.
He's a student, right? Yeah. And he was just a little... I mean, if he was older than me. If he was, it was only by a year or so. And yeah, I was completely blown away. Yeah. There are a couple guys, I'm trying to think, it's only because, again, we're talking, so I'm blanking on names, I'm terrible.
Well, I couldn't get the name either, so.
One of my faults is very bad with names.
Yeah. Apparently you and I both, so.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not a good
in the world
match.
We're in, it's not a great.
Both of us can be like, the guy with the face, yeah.
There were some incredible Latin players I remember watching when I was... when I was there, I want to say that Louis Conte came and did a thing while I was there that was
right. But that's that you're mentioning him and JR. They came in. I meant like fellow students that you were just like
yeah.
Like this guy, who that? Mm-hmm. But yeah, no one. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
no. I mean, there most definitely were. I'm just banging on who they were right now.
I love this guy. He doesn't remember who he went to school with. I love
amazing
it.
Players, all their names are blanking me at the moment.
But yeah. Who were you trying to be at that point? And I ask that, meaning, you know what I hope you know what I mean. Like, this guy's changed. Like, they go into a Berklee and they're like, I'm going to be, you know, fusion guy, jazz guy. Like,
I was pretty sure that I would be at Berklee for a year and then get picked up by somebody and it would be a world tour and I would be out there. Like,
but what kind of someone were you looking to get picked up?
I was all into the chops. I mean, I was way into Vinny. I was way into, honestly, even Carter Beauford at that point. Right as I entered Berklee was when I got into Dave Matthews and Carter and learning all the crazy shit. I loved the idea of being able to play like that, but within a pop sensibility.
Yeah.
So, like, when I first went to Berklee, obviously you get paired up with jazz players and teachers all the time, and I just failed miserably at connecting with a jazz player because I never really listened. I like listening to jazz, but that's not what I was getting my motivation from, you know? I like pop songs. I like rock songs. I like actual songs, you know? The fact that I was in a jam band for X amount of years is crazy to me now because a song nowadays that lasts more than 4 minutes is like, what are we even doing here? You know, I enjoyed that structure, and then finding the musicality around it. So the players that would do that, like Carter, I mean, Jesus, incredible that they could have songs like that, and he could do what he did in that setting, and it's still acceptable. Like, not just acceptable, but like, wow, how cool,
right?
You know. Now, granted, these days when I listen to it, I've gotten a little older, and I was like, okay, enough already with the things. But that was also Carter being much younger too. Listen to him play now is not the same either.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Vinny to me, same. I mean, Jesus, it's just, I still have this conversation with drummer friends of mine here about, like, name a guy that can be as versatile and as incredible at every corner of it than him. I don't know of one even now, you know? And
I don't think anyone gets the chance. I mean, I'm not making it to be just that, but I mean, I used to talk about that in the early, like, 10 years ago or 11 years ago when I started the show, like, the idea of, like, Vinny did Megadeth. Nine people.
Right.
Like, that's played on a freaking Megadeth record. Yeah. And Gino Vannelli, and, you know, it's
that Gino Vannelli stuff, yeah.
But nobody gets the opportunity to do that kind of scope now.
Yeah.
I can't think of it.
I wonder if it's that they don't get the opportunity, or there are very few people that can pull that off. You know what I mean?
I mean, I've heard of guys talk about certain guys and say, I think he could. Yeah. I've heard that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't...
It's true. Yeah, no, I don't know.
Could you play in a Megadeth record? I mean, I'm asking you, just, do you think you could handle it? Like, given enough time, could you prepare? Could you do that kind of thing? Would you like to try?
I would love to. I'll take any challenge.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, no.
That's the first step.
100%.
See, you got to want the ball, completely, so to speak. Completely. To get out there on the mound and be like, I want the ball.
Yeah.
Give it to me.
I love things that get me out of my comfort zone now, no matter what the thing is. I you know, I know the thing that I do, and I know the thing that I'm good at. I love trying to dip into other areas. You know, we were talking about, just before we started this thing, we were talking about this Jeff Beck tribute that happened at the beginning of this year.
Yes.
And I got asked to do it. I was like, oh man, yes, because I'm going to have to sit and play along with these songs a lot and learn, really learn them. You can't chart Jeff Beck stuff.
I want to be really clear, because I wasn't there. Like, yeah, my buddy who was, he saw you. Yeah. This means that you are like the drummer of for the night.
Yeah.
Just to be, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is it like people coming in and out? Otherwise, like,
right. The rhythm section was the rhythm section for the night. And then every song had a different guitar player and whatever. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha. So you have to know the whole set.
Completely. Okay. Yeah. And, it took a long time. I mean, if I had been, it was done at the beginning of the year for good, with good intention of, like, people, players wouldn't be as busy right at the beginning of the year, have time to be able to learn stuff. And that was what it was about. I sat behind the kit at home learning the songs, which I don't do very often. Mm-hmm. You know, if I get called for a gig, I can just listen to the tunes and make charts and be good to go on the gig without, it takes me, the amount of time it takes to chart a tune is the length of the tune. You got 10 songs, 35 minutes, whatever, good to go. Let's do the gig. That I can do well. Learning 12 or whatever Jeff Beck tunes, that took some time. But I loved it. I love sitting down. And it's not just challenging to have to learn the stuff. Obviously, there's lots of odd time stuff and all that, blah, blah, blah. But the type of, the way that it's played, I knew that I was going to come out feeling not as great about it because I'm not Vinny Colaiuta, you know? And I mean, I would love to know that I could step into a gig and pull all that stuff off, and I will try.
Do you feel like you made mistakes, or you?
Not mistakes that pulled the that were even really noticed from outside.
I was gonna say nobody noticed, right?
But for me, like, I know what I want to be able to do, but I also know that I don't spend the time necessarily on a constant preparing to do that. You know.
You bring up an interesting point, though. I mean, can we maybe think for a moment? Do you think Vinny also has those thoughts? Doesn't Vinny go?
I hope so.
I could have done better.
I don't know. I mean, yes, I'm sure he does. Everybody does, right? Is there?
As I'm saying,
every player.
I think he's human,
and I think you just get that much more intense of the deeper in you get, right? I think there's that much more. It's like it's like anything. The better you get at it, the more you want to get out of it, you know. And I don't think playing drums. Listen, I've played drums since I started playing when I was pretty much when we moved to the States when I was 12, 11 or 12 or so. And I still want to get as much out of them as I possibly can, you know. Another, not to get back to this Chesney gig, but another great thing about it is they let me do whatever I want on it. I'm not playing the songs like they are on the record at all. I get to put myself into it 100%. If I want to do some crazy ass shit, whatever. So I've gotten to really blow some chops on this gig in a really fun way.
And this is, by the way, also coming from like Kenny is like, bro, do it.
The more, as long as it's rock and I'm bringing that energy, he wants it to be as much. The thing that makes it the best for him is when I'm putting myself as much into it as possible.
Well, you've said this a couple times now, like it's a rock gig. You've referenced this.
For me, it is.
In your mind, then what's closest to it? Like, in your mind, when you're hearing it, when you're saying, it's not really country. What is it then? What bands do you conjure up? Like, who do you hear?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's tough to say because the songs. Listen, as soon as you listen to the songs, yes, they're country songs. So I guess I will say some of the tunes are not as country as others.
I know what you're saying. I get that it's like a thing here. It's like it's rocky. They say throw some steel on it and sing with a twang and boom, it's country, it's baby. Country.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I get it.
And Kenny's got a little bit of
it's like, no, it isn't. Voice. It's fucking rock and pop.
Exactly. If you had to put different words to it, even Kenny doesn't even always sound country when he's singing. It's when you listen to the band, there is nothing. I mean, you got three electric guitar players up front, bass, keys, and drums. I mean, it's as rock as I do not beat my hands up like this on a gig regularly. I've got freaking blisters from two gigs, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of another band that has that sort of thing.
If it doesn't, it doesn't. If nothing conjures up, then, you know.
Because there's something beautiful about the, like, you get to do your thing and play that hard and be that free and never feel like, listen, I'm very aware of everybody else on the stage and I never want to be hogging a space that I am not the best suited for, right? I mean, no matter what that is. So I love the fact that everybody on stage has a freedom to bring it there. I mean, you want that in the studio too. The best session you're going to get, the best performance you're going to get of a song is when everybody feels like they are free to be themselves in that moment. And, so the fact that that's my road gig has that as a constant. Nobody has to question that, you know.
Yeah,
we go up there every night and nobody questions. I could fuck up royally on something. If anything, we're just gonna laugh about it, you know. And nobody's gonna even fine, you know. Moving on.
I love that. See, that's great. There's not much. Yeah, it's not James Brown. You're not getting fined.
Oh God,
I love it.
There's none of that bullshit.
I love it, man.
You know. Yeah.
By the way, what was the last tour you did then prior to?
So I had been in Jewel's band for a long time, and I'd actually been her musical director for some amount of time in there too, but she doesn't tour very much. So I had done like a couple of Christmas tours with her where we were gone for like a month, you know, at that time of year where actually session work isn't very busy anyway. We'd leave like right after Thanksgiving and get back right before Christmas kind of vibe. Which those tours were super fun too. Nothing to take away from that. A lot of brush work and lighter type of stuff, but she's such an incredible singer. And again, an amazing person to work with, allows the band to bring it, be the band. She wants the band to do their own thing. Kind of, it's a great situation. And I still play with her whenever I can around whatever's going on. Crazily enough, years, 10 or more years ago, I was playing with Hank Jr., which was a bizarre gig. Really interesting.
Let's get into it. Come on.
Well, I did that for like 3 years, but one of the years I think we only did 3 gigs. So I think in 3 years I barely got above 100 gigs. But you know.
Recommended for it? One of those?
I was. Okay, so there's a scenario. So I got the call. The guy that was the band leader at that point, a guy named Jimmy Hall, great soul, one of the greatest soul singers, incredible, incredible sax player, and he had been in that band for a long time. And so when they needed a drummer, he called me. I played with him around town, you know, when he would play around. And so he called me for it. Told me all about the gig, all the details, and said, okay, so auditions are blah, 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 whatever day. And I was like, Jimmy, and he, I don't know, I'm fucking ego, but I was like, Jimmy, I'm not auditioning for this gig. It's like, if you want to offer me the gig, I would be into doing it, you know, but I'm not going to audition for it. So he went back to whoever, Hank and whoever else, and was like, hey, listen, I've got the guy, but, you know, he doesn't want to audition. And they said, okay, it's on you. If he doesn't work out, this is on your shoulders. And so Jimmy said, okay, good. So the audition days turned into rehearsal days. So when I first came in, I didn't know. I knew some of the band, but I didn't know all of them. And the guys I didn't know looked at me like, who's this dude walking in, freaking not going to audition, just going to show up. Thankfully, it worked out. And it was, and that was super fun. Again, I got all the freedom to play whatever I wanted. It's just that, you know, Hank is Hank. I mean, he's such an incredible personality to get to witness, because he is an iconic center of the country music scene. I mean, his dad was the beginning of country music, essentially. I mean, you know,
family tradition.
And the stories that he had to tell, I got to fly with him a fair amount on his plane, because they were very cool about me doing sessions. And if the bus was leaving on a Thursday night or whatever, if there was a day that they were going to miss because the bus was leaving the night before, they would let me stay that next day and do the session, whatever, and then just fly with Hank right before the gig, which also may have got a little bit weird with the band at times, but anyway, whatever.
Why is he
he's just flying in right before, yeah, walking up on, anyway. Yeah. Yeah. But on the plane, I would hear occasionally Hank talking about to whoever. He might have his publicist or somebody from like the Country Music Hall of Fame was on the plane at one point to talk about the family tradition thing that they had at the Hall of Fame for a while. And whenever Hank would get talking about back in the day when he was a kid, I just knew that I was in the presence of, like, man, this is really cool to hear some of these stories about that people might hear about on, I don't know, to do with senior, you know, to do with freaking Hank Williams.
He's a legend, yeah, himself.
Yeah.
Junior.
Yeah.
I mean, Bo Cephas.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And what he overcame to be able to make a career for himself is huge. I don't think people know, like, his mom sort of tried to get him up there to be his dad after his dad died. His mom, and Hank was still a kid. I mean, he was...
You mean like pimped him out?
Like, kind of pimped him out on stage to try and do the music of Hank Sr. And it just never worked.
Go make a buck for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he was really... And he had a really tough time. But boy, he's a force to be reckoned with when he's on stage. So for a while, it was fun. And then there were a few nights where I was behind the drums, like before we went on stage, because we'd have there'd be some video thing that would come on before we'd get up there and hit. And while I was waiting for all that to go on, I'd be standing there thinking like, I'm just not into this anymore. It was just like trying to pull a train, like just to get to the other side of the show. You know, sometimes it was just so loud and so much stuff going on and not always so much listening, you know. It's just like I could do a fill for four bars before a thing, and I'm not sure if anybody would really notice the thing. Like, Hank would be doing some crazy guitar. Anyway, there was a point I was like, and I'm done. That being said, if I got called to sub that gig now, I would love to do it. I'd love to do a couple nights with them, just because I don't think the show has changed in 10 plus years or whatever it's been. And it's a trip. It's a trip to do. But to be the guy on it, yeah, I was pretty done. And I was crazy busy back then. I mean, I was literally sessions all week and then out on the weekends and then sessions all weekend. There was a point I was just getting worn out on it too, you know. So that was that. And that was the last gig. That was literally the last gig I did before now. So that's
right.
Probably been 12 years or something like that.
I got you. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And by the way, since you did grow up here and you were here in the 80s and all that, in the 90s, yeah.
Yeah.
You remember and have any Larry London stories?
Man, I wish. You know, I never knew him. I didn't really listen to, not that Larry London just played country music, he played everything, but when I was here, it was an adjustment period for sure, and I didn't really, for some reason, I just never saw him play, which is sad because I'm a really big fan of not just what he played, but the fact that he was doing it here at that time. You know, they weren't, not to, nothing about Nashville drummers here, but they weren't guys pushing the boundaries as much. Like Larry just seemed to, yeah, I mean, he, yeah, yeah. Anyway, so no, I don't have any, unfortunately. I'm sorry, that's a pretty boring answer, but.
No.
Too bad, yeah.
I was just curious, because I'm also sometimes just like, have you ever heard any stories, any good stories, that's all, that kind of thing. Like,
you know, one of the guys, if I was to tell a story from the early days of moving to Nashville, one of the first things I got to see was at the Bluebird Cafe, a band called the Kingsnakes, which turned into the Blue Bloods. This was a band, a blues band. Mike Henderson was the lead guy in it, and they would play every Monday night at the Bluebird. You know, a couple sets of blues standards done by a band of mostly session guys. Kenny Greenberg, who I still work with now, was in that band back then. I didn't know. I was 13 watching them or whatever from the... Like right when you walk in the door, I'd be sitting by like the desk where they collect the money, just kind of watching the band. Small, the Bluebird's really small, right? So, and James Stroud, who turned out to be one of country's big producers, who has played drums on huge big tracks, but he was the drummer in that band. And I remember watching him play and just thinking like, that's the guy's spot that I want to take. Like, I remember seeing Stroud back then. I was lucky enough to work with him many years after that. But and he was just such a bigger-than-life character. But anyway, it's cool to think about those days. I was 87, 86, 87, something like that, when I was watching that. And then how I know those guys after I became a part of the scene and started working in it and stuff, because those guys blew my mind as a kid. And I watched that blues band for years. John Gardner is a drummer that played in that band a bunch after Stroud left, I guess, and maybe no better shuffle. John Gardner just had the, oh man, classy player. Anyway.
Like, to this day, is it like the best shuffle you've ever heard, kind of thing?
In my memory, it is. I haven't seen John play in a long time, but the way that he approached it, it was interesting. He had a ride cymbal up to the left of him.
Was he open-handed, or was
no? He played regular right-handed cross or whatever, but he would play the ride with his right hand, but up to the left, like it was up, like up and kind of almost flat. Vertical, you know.
Yeah.
And then he had a little crash where the ride would be normally, and so he would hit he'd do a little like snare, like, and hit the crash thing. But then he would, and I guess he would switch back and forth a little bit on to what hand was on the ride. But man, just the way he played was so free and relaxed in such an interesting setup. But man, anyway. One of my favorites from back then.
Yeah, no, I love
that. And then again, another guy that I got to know from just being around the scene, because Nashville is a really community-based vibe. And so at some point you will run into, I mean, even drummers are often obviously not on the same gig together or session together for the most part. And I got to know him. It's the nicest dude. Just the nicest dude. So very complimentary to me, which was super nice of him too. Like, it was great. Great. This town is very special in that sense.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. I mean, yeah. We talked about. I mean, obviously, you thought about for a minute going to New York. You were saying crossed your mind.
Yeah. I mean, I just thought after I got done with. So after I got out of college, I came back here for a minute. I played some a couple rock records of some bands that didn't end up doing anything, and played in a band around town for a little while. And then I started playing with Colonel Bruce Hampton out of Atlanta.
Yeah.
Jeff Sipe had been the guy that had played with him during the 90s, I guess, when they had been doing the aquarium rescue unit thing. And then he had gone through a couple other band things. And then I came in, and I was a huge fan of ARU when they were, and I was a huge fan of Sipe and his ability. Talk about freedom to just put stuff where you want to. And it seemed like anything he could think of fit in whatever space he wanted to fit it. And that band was just a band of ridiculous players. And so I was a huge fan in high school. And then as soon as I was done with college, I got the opportunity to play with Bruce. And that was a pretty big turning area for me, because I got to have an education outside of school. I did the Berkeley thing, great, and now I was doing the road thing with Colonel Bruce, who was a very interesting character who I so wish was still alive today. And he taught me a lot, even though it took me years to understand all that he had to teach. I was still full of ego when I was 24, 25, 26 when I was on the road with him. But man, I got to play with Richie Haywood, who was one of my absolute heroes. We got to do like the double drumming thing, because Richie, everybody was a huge fan of Bruce. So whenever we were playing, they would want to come out and see him. So I got to be around, I mean, obviously the jam band guys, Widespread and Fish and Allman Brothers and all those guys would be around all the time. And then we opened for Little Feet for a little while, so I got to meet all those guys, but got to meet Richie and actually become friends with him. And then he would come out and play whole shows with us. I mean, we would maybe do the first 30 minutes, and then Bruce would have Richie come up, and I'd have a kit set up for him, and he and I would play together for... And he kind of sort of knew the tunes, but they were kind of free jam bandy kind of tunes. So there'd be some sort of form, and then it would just kind of be whatever. And
nobody played like him, right? Nobody.
No. And it was so interesting, because when you see him playing Little Feet, and I grew up listening. I mean, one of the records I used to play to when I used to play the records all the time in high school was Waiting for Columbus. I mean, I played that record through, I know it backwards still. And what's so interesting is when you see him play with Little Feet, that band moved, they breathed together. He would go into a fill and maybe it would speed up and then it would come back down right on the downbeat again. And that whole band would move like that. It was so interesting. Like watching a flock of birds almost, like fly through the air. Mm-hmm. Like they just sort of all just kind of moved together somehow. And then playing with him on the stage, I could feel that push and pull. But it was so natural. It was unnatural to me. I had to think about how he was playing, but he did. That's just how he moved. And it was, yeah, I love, again, signature of a player, right? I mean, having your own thing. I think it's beautiful. So, yeah, that was a highlight for
one
sure.
One of the greasiest.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, just...
But without having to even think about it, that's just who he was. You know?
And you got to know him.
I got to know him, yeah. It was really great.
Was he the kind of guy who just didn't want to talk drums? Essentially, that he was.
We would talk drums, but life as well. I mean, you know, he ended up dating a girl for a while that I had been friends with through the Colonel Bruce thing and everything else, and so there was a lot more just life, just being people, kind of thing.
That's what I mean. Exactly.
A funny little Richie story, real quick though. The first gig I did with Colonel Bruce was at the Georgia Theater in Athens. And we were opening up for a band that Richie was the drummer. It was some little band with a few badasses doing a thing for a little while. Richie was the drummer, and they told me that I could use Richie's kit because it was a big kit and it was right on stage. And it was like, I could set up down here in the corner, and his tech was like, "Nah, man, Richie will be cool with it. You can just use his kit. Just can you do it without moving anything?" Yeah, sure, no problem. I'm completely adaptable, no problem. So I didn't move anything. So we did the sound, but Richie wasn't there. So we do the sound check, and as we get done with the sound check, Richie comes on stage. Never met him before. One of my idols. Never met him before. He comes out and is like, "Who the fuck said this guy can play?" Like, he was pissed that somebody, some kid, was playing his kit. And I was like, so I got stumbling and whatever, and I was trying to find the tech, like, bail me out here. And he wasn't around. He finally came up and it ended up being completely fine. Richie was fine with it, but not particularly cool with it, but okay, fine. And so thankfully he watched the gig, and thankfully it was my first gig with Bruce too, and thankfully it went well, and he came up afterwards, and then things were cool. And then, you know, he was like, "Okay, kid can play. Now we can chat." And although I only became friends with him about a year later when we were opening dates for him, it was cool. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fucking great, man. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
You work with a lot of producers, you were saying. All right, talk to me. Like, who? Mm-hmm. What makes a good producer?
I used to think it was guys that could really hear the details of, you know, sometimes I'd be working with some big name guy and we'd be in the control room listening to a take, and I would hear that there was something rubbing, either tonally, or a lot of times it'd be like a hat acoustic thing that wasn't, something wasn't happening, and I would think, God, am I the only guy? Like, how can this producer not hear these things? And then I think I realized over time that sometimes those are not the most important things. So like, we can work on that in a minute. What's the vibe of the track? What's the feel? What's, are we getting the intention of what this tune is about? You know, I think producers that can allow, again, it comes back to this sort of central point, allow the players to bring their piece. Whenever I'm in the studio and a producer starts spouting out too many things about the tune before we've even run it, it's like, hey, can we just listen to it and just play it? And you can redirect all day, fine. But maybe there's something to be had in actually hiring these guys to play on the thing.
Back to that.
And then seeing what comes out.
Back to that, the casting, as you said.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then if it's not, sure, we may take a bridge the wrong way and you may like, hey, actually this bridge needs to kind of do this. Well, we're not getting this thing right or whatever it is, fine. But before you go in and say, okay, guys, this needs to be like this, needs to be like this, you know, I admire producers that allow the band to be the band. And I also admire producers that don't need too much safety. Like, we live in an age of you can get 1,000 different versions and decide later what you want to do. You know, there's hard drive space for days, and the recording programs allow producers to be able to, like, let me just make sure I get 3 different fields for a chorus so that I can decide later what the thing is. I admire producers that at least can, even if they don't know the full picture before the band starts recording, can decide on the spot, this is what works and this doesn't. And so this is what we're going to do. You know, at least for the band, it's like, at least we know, we can see the direction, as opposed to, let's just do all the things and I'll figure it out later. You know, I worked with a producer who ended up becoming very big, who was cutting a band, a new band, in a studio that wanted to really do the live thing and do it to tape. And so right there, you've limited the amount of post-production you can do. I mean, tape means that you are, okay, the band's recording, we only have so much space. We're gonna get the right one and then we're gonna move on. And he would do it. And literally sometimes it was like the second take, he'd be like, man, guys, that's great. It feels awesome. Let's go. I was like, that's awesome that he is not feeling like he's confident in the way he's hearing it now, that he doesn't need to have 4 other examples to sift through later to figure out what the best. Could we have had a better fill going into the bridge? Maybe, but this is what was on this track. And it feels good. So there. You know, I love that approach, and I feel like that's where we get into trouble sometimes with having endless possibilities for any opportunity. Like, pick the one that works. Uh-huh. You know,
I know. I'm picturing like some chick at the place, or like with the menu, when they have everything.
Yeah.
She keeps flipping it. I don't know what I want.
Yeah. Well, now I was going to do this.
Too many options.
Maybe, you know,
I might get this.
What if it's not perfect when it comes out? Yeah.
And you're actually right. Too many options. Like, I don't know what I want. Give me all these different, and I'll decide later. No, bro.
Decide now. And part of it is that, like, later, you're not going to be in the same headspace that you are right now in the vibe while we're tracking. With all the stuff we've been talking about with this track and the blah, 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 and the singer doing whatever it is. I feel like that's the way the song should be heard. Mm. Not the after you're in a different space. You're now in an analytical spot. Not a feel spot, as far as, you know, for the most part. I mean, everybody's got their process. For me, I love the idea of as much of it that went down in the moment while we were crafting the song or the arrangement or whatever. It's a beautiful spot.
You know? So is it also fair to say that, I mean, in a somewhat ideal producer for you is someone who is going to give you the free rein. They hired you because, well, as you said, they want your brain,
yeah,
putting, hey, how about this?
Yeah,
how about this?
Yeah.
So maybe no direction, really just a facilitator, someone who just hired you, scheduled the time. No, I'm kind of being serious.
Yeah,
like is that sort of ideal for you? That someone who's just really no direction, they're just like there to be like, that was great, man.
I love the idea that the first takedown is do you. And then afterwards, okay, we need, I mean, because I do like direction, but I don't But I almost feel like too much direction in the beginning. When a producer says, this needs to rock, boy, that right there is such a wide definition. Like, mm-hmm. what, like big sloshy rock with a ride thing, tight but heavy hitting? I mean, there's a lot of ways, right? Why don't you let me take a stab at it and then say, hey, let's tighten that up a little bit. I love the intensity, but let's do that. And then when we go to the chorus, we'll do, you know, whatever it is. I like direction from the, from, you've seen what I've thought it was. Now let me hear what you're imagining or what you're envisioning for the thing.
So you know? That you're down with, you like that kind of love thing. At least, but give me a chance.
Give me a chance to show you what I'm thinking.
Don't come out of the gate with, okay, guys, this is what I'm hearing in my head.
And, right. Yeah. So there was a guy in the middle of the pandemic when we were doing a lot of home recording, obviously, and there people were sending stuff around. There was a guy that I'm good friends with now, and he's an incredible rock singer, writer, and so he would send me songs that were definitely rock, not of the country, nothing Nashville to do with it. And he was like, okay, here's the song, and it was very basic, like it had I don't even think there were a lot of loops, but there was a lot of drum stuff for me to go on. It was just kind of what he had, and then he would say, like, hey, just so you know, the choruses are going to be big. There's going to be a lot of guitars, blah, blah, blah. Other than that, what do you want from me? Do you want me to tell you kind of what I'm thinking on it? He was like, and he told me, because I have some pretty established ideas of what I want the drums to do. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right, I'll tell you what. Let me take the first stab at it. And let's see how close we are. And then we'll talk about it afterwards, right? So I did it. And I did it two or three passes, and they gave him the one that I thought was best, kind of me working through the tune. Because it took thinking stuff, right? It's not just like verse chorus. It was like, what's cool in this part? So he called me that evening, and he was like, dude, so... And I was just so ready for him to be like, man, yeah, we're going to need to change everything, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. He's like, I was listening to it. And
I appreciate what you did.
Yeah, it was pretty much that. He was like, and man, you couldn't have been more on it. He was like, right. And in fact, I actually rewrote what I wanted on the bridge based upon what you played, because I think it's so cool and whatever. And that only, and I'm not, that's not as much a pat on the back as much as drummers know drums. Yeah. So let the drummer play the drums first before you start saying what the drum should be. And then if it isn't what you're imagining, we can move it in that direction so much easier. You know what I mean? So, yeah, there you go.
So I just, again, like it's more about being a facilitator, being casting.
Yeah, yeah, that's big. Listen, I grew up...
You get the right team.
I grew up listening to... I grew up trying to imitate other drummers. I grew up listening when I learned to play drums by playing along with music.
Yeah.
And learning other drummers' parts as close as I possibly could. I got into let's not say argument, let's just say a light dispute with a teacher at Berkeley about copying parts and the teacher was like, but you'll never learn any, you'll never develop your own style if you are always copying another drummer. And I was like, I think that you have to copy other people to understand what even a style is to get to your own style, you know? I was all over Picaro and I play along with Metallica tracks. I play along with, you know, I mean, there's, James Taylor is one of my ultimates. So, Carlos Vega obviously was a guy that I hold, he's always been in my top three. Carlos Vega was one of the most underrated, badasses. And so I copied those guys all day, and then I would record myself and listen to it and see how close I could get. That I think is where it comes from. Those guys, I don't think when I think about those guys recording records, I don't feel like they came in and had to stick to a template. I feel like a lot of those records were made by the styles those guys brought to it. And that's music. Why are we doing this? What is the thing that I don't do it because I like, it's not that I like hitting drums, it's that I like what I'm able to explain, how I can present it. What difference can I make to a thing that wasn't done before? That's probably why I don't get called for X amount of records, is because yes, I can play straight down. Of course, I can play you straight down the middle part, blah, blah, blah. And that's completely fine and probably what's necessary in the things that are necessary for. I do like exploring what the options are, though. you know. And I think that it sometimes it when it doesn't work, it doesn't work completely. But boy, when it does, you want to talk about, like, you know, Gad.
Yeah.
Gad's probably at the top of my pile. You know, guys that can very subtly make a thing that is the defining moment of those songs. You know.
Yeah.
That's it to me.
Yeah. A 50 ways kind of thing to be able to bring that.
Yeah, I mean, who does that? Who comes up with something, you know, those kind of things that are so far out of the realm?
And it makes the radio, too.
Makes the radio and it makes the song, you know?
Well, both, I'm saying.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, exactly. It makes a song that is now a pop song.
Look, it's one thing to make a song on a record, right? And it could be esoteric for musicians.
Right.
Thing.
Right.
Oh, man, the Chops, great.
Right.
That shit made the radio. That was a hit song. That's the thing.
Not completely.
And you're in Nashville, where that's another thing. I mean, so do you get that? I mean, I've asked this before, like guys, like a producer, where they just come out and say, like, guys, you know, we're making a, that's what we're doing here.
Yeah.
We're trying to get on the radio here, guys.
Oh, completely.
Is that oftentimes the message of, like,
I think that
that's what we're doing.
I think it's the underlying of everything in this town. Everything that's recorded in this town is with that in mind. And it used to be, and what it still is, it depends on what artist you're recording with, the sort of levels, or I should say, like, the lines of acceptability are pretty narrow for a lot of artists. You know, the country market isn't so diverse in its most middle mainstream part. Now, there are diverse sides of country, for sure. And there are certain songs that you can kind of maybe get away with some things. But I've definitely felt how close those lines are a lot of times. And I dip a toe in every once in a while to, like, can we go? No, we can't go there. This is, hey, and, you know, there's a lot of times, like, man, that's cool. Could we just simplify the thing or whatever? And I'm like, I get it completely.
And you take that as, like, they're just being like, dude, radio.
Completely.
Radio.
What's going to fit in the genre? Completely. Yeah, no, it's...
You just went outside the bounds.
They're not making records, like, for the art's sake of the record.
Well, that's what I'm...
They're making records for radio.
That's what I'm saying.
For sure. And these are... And unfortunately, the scene is what it is now, that they don't get a lot of options to get that song on the radio, the one that happens to get there. If the first two or three aren't getting there, good luck continuing that deal or whatever. You know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's not so easy anymore.
Yeah. This isn't the old days, right? Where you got three records to...
Yeah, three records to find your direction, you know? Not so much the case.
That's the Kenny Aronoff. Mellencamp, you know, four chances, you know? It's like, yeah, we get it, man. I get it. Like, it doesn't exist anymore.
That's right.
I understand.
And, you know, not only that, but they're doing it in sort of record time, considering to what they used to spend on a record back then. You know, nowadays records are made in a couple days, you know, for the most part, you know. It's not, you know, back, I hear lots of stories from session guys that were doing in the heyday of country in the 90s. That's like, that was when the gold rush of country, you know, and it was being booked week by week. You know, you wouldn't get booked on a day, you'd get booked by the week. That's it, you know, working triples all day, you know, making all kinds of money. Nowadays, if you get booked for more than a couple of days, it's like, awesome. We actually get some time to live in this, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, different time. I get it. You know, got to do the thing.
Yeah.
But there's still room for art in all of it. I do believe... I was actually asked this question just the other day by a friend of mine who is not a musician at all. And who asked me if my love for drums was about the mechanics of playing drums or the art. Where is the art in playing drums? Like, what does that mean to me? You know, which was kind of an interesting question. I was like, yeah, there's definitely an art to it, because it's not, you don't just show up and play the part for the tune. You think about it's hard to explain. It's a conversation, right? It's a conversation with both the song and the other players on it, and what it is that it needs from the drums, and what can I do that's going to be like, oh man, yeah, that's a comfortable place for everybody. That's nice. That's a nice bed to be able to create this other stuff on. Or yeah, I don't know. It's a heavy topic, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you're reminding me of the wasn't it Tony Williams, like, well, my mailman can play a beat.
Yeah, that's right.
Wasn't that him?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, yeah. I love that idea, though. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kind of the basis of where what you're talking about, yeah. That idea of like, well, a lot of guys can do that.
Right, right.
Now it's about...
What, yeah. Well, how, but what can you... Well, it, where's your space in it? You know?
Not only that, but I mean, I'm sorry, but I'm going back real quick to just, you said about JR. Like, you got to sit next to JR and hear that sound, and it's that thing where you're like... It's probably to this day you're thinking, no, you've never heard that again.
Oh yeah, not like that.
Like it's a thumbprint.
Yeah, his
and certain guys.
The way he feels the mm-hmm. the back, the vibe, the groove, the backbeat, the whatever. There's not even a word I think that like it's where he settles in it.
Where it sits.
Is
where
what
it
makes it. You know. Yeah.
It's like you're saying. It's like the really special ones.
Yeah.
Nobody.
So no, it's their own thing.
It's their own thing.
And that...
And that's the part of the art. It's part of the mechanics, but that's the art.
It's the art. And I feel like it's an art that is rarer and rarer because these days...
You think so?
I should say that there's a lot more outside of it that's becoming... That's more the forefront. You're seeing these guys on, these... YouTube things or the Instagram videos or whatever,
right?
You know, where the guys are, you know, they only have 15, 20 seconds to really show their thing,
right?
And a lot of it, and there's some guys that I'm watching, yeah. Like, yeah. This is incredible. Like, it's for 20 seconds, the talent that's coming out is insane. Like, I think that when I was growing up watching drummers like Dennis Chambers, or I'm trying to think of the more insane drummers.
Yeah. Well, and still watching Buddy and going,
You
know what I mean? Still.
Even that. And yet you watch some of these young guys today that are kind of pulling that kind of skill off. Now, can they play a song? I don't know. What would they be like on a session? Probably like you'd have to calm them down a little bit, whatever. But as far as pure skill is concerned, it blows my mind, actually, some of the guys that are out there, you know. But that's its own art, maybe, but that's not the art that I'm talking about, you know.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, I just flip it for me, like, to, like, watching, like, I don't know, a guitar player, like you said, like, shred, and it's just like, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
I'm bored.
Now I'm done, yeah.
I'm bored.
Yeah. It was awesome for a second, now what? Yeah.
Right, and then you hear a song, and hear, like, Mike Campbell... play a melodic solo and you're like, you know, just like on You Got Lucky.
Yeah. Oh, God.
And it's like,
Yeah. Well, that's the shit you're going to
sing. Now, that's a solo.
That's the stuff you're going to sing afterwards, right?
You know what I mean?
Yeah, completely. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying I feel like is a little more... It's only getting more rare because there's less space for it, I think. I think that there is so much taken up by this... incredible chops all the way across the board. It's hard to find things that you can just sit into. Now, I will say I've just recently gotten into a couple of pop records that have nothing, that are all about kind of cool melodies and stuff like that. And so I do think that there's that stuff. I don't know what I'm talking about. I do think there's that stuff out there, but I'm thinking mostly purely from a player perspective. When I'm thinking about drummers that are really have that artsy dynamic that can really kind of bring different things into a genre that they wouldn't, that doesn't necessarily always fit into, I think is what's so cool. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Drummers that can bring their own thing into it, it's something that's pretty far from where their thing came. You know, that to me is, that's art. That's art making it all. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
Man, thank you. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Man, Nick Buta.
Yeah, what a pleasure to be on this show. I gotta say, when you first texted or called whatever about doing this, I was very psyched about it. So thank you.
Oh, right on, man. Yeah, thank you. Well, it's great to have you, and I appreciate you coming, man. Thank you. All right.
Thanks so much.